Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Elizabeth McGowan was only 15 years old when her father died of melanoma at the age of 44. When she was just out of college, McGowan was diagnosed with the same cancer that took her father. At first, she thought it was a death sentence. But at 39, McGowan reached the major milestone of being 5 years cancer-free after over a decade of treatments. To mark the occasion, she set out to bike over 4,000 miles solo across America from west to east coast. Her new book, Outpedaling the Big C, documents not only her cycling journey, but her experience dealing with her cancer, as well as her father's. McGowan joins me now for this month's Fit for You segment and starts by explaining the goal of her trip.
A huge part of this trip, I organized it actually as a fundraiser for the hospital in Waukesha, where I'd had a lot of my treatments for melanoma. So my pitch was, look, I want people to know that cancer is survivable. There is no fault in anybody who doesn't survive, but I wanted people to see living evidence that you can get through this and have a robust life on the other side. So that was my goal. And it was, outreach was key. So it made me interact with people.
You've done other physical adventures before, most notably the Appalachian Trail earlier in your life, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But with a biking trip across America, did you feel the need to do any extra prepping, either in your gear or training, before you embarked on this trip? Because at this point, you had a clean bill of health.
That's right. This trip I organized to celebrate being 5 years cancer free, right? And it would be, as one of my friends said, it would be very un-Elizabeth-like to have a party. So instead, I had to organize a trip, and I had wanted to ride my bike across the country. And I approached the hospital staff about helping me, you know, be the collector of the money, their foundation. And they said yes. So then I was on my way. So with backpacking and bike packing, I guess you can call it, there's a lot of overlap. So I had gear from hiking, which I could just sort of recycle for my bicycle, which was lovely. And my goal was, I had two panniers and they went over my rear tire. And if they didn't fit in there, they didn't go on the trip, because I did not want to carry a lot. I wanted this to be, I'm a minimalist, and this trip just emphasized that. So the prep, one of the reasons I left in August is because the weather in Wisconsin, training is a little more difficult, right? So I was able to build up some stamina that spring of 2000. And then I launched the trip. Well, I had to drive out to Oregon, but doing that gave me a little bit more time to, I don't know that you can ever be totally prepared, but I felt prepared enough.
Well, it is intimidating as well. And, you know, this was obviously a celebration of a clean bill of health, but did you always have like a lingering concern for your health traveling through bike alone if something were to happen?
That was really the last thing that I worried about. I was more concerned about, I had put this out there, and this was kind of, you know, this was the early internet era, but I had vowed and promised a lot of people that I was going to do this ride. And it sounds great, but there were times when we were driving, my husband and I were driving out to Oregon, because the trail starts in Astoria, which is on the Pacific Ocean. And some of the landscapes up and down, I thought, what am I doing? Why didn't I just tell people I would ride around the state of Wisconsin? Wouldn't that have been good enough? That was the daunting part, because I thought, holy cow, I've got to deliver. So it was kind of a head game. The physical part, I thought, we'll see. So that was the daunting part.
Now, the structure of your book goes between your cycling journey and flashes back both to your own cancer treatments as well as your experience witnessing your father going through melanoma as well. You were diagnosed kind of around the same age he was, and it gives us real insight into the big scope of your journey and why you were on this bike. So why did you feel it was best to share your story this way in this structure?
Well, that took a long time. And, you know, as a reporter, we are trained to ask questions of other people and put them on the spot and have them respond. And then synthesize that material. So I found it really difficult to ask myself, maybe not asking myself, the answering part was hard. And in doing this book, I did not want it to be a travelogue. I didn't want to say, oh, I saw this and I met this person and they invited me into their house and we, all of those lovely things that happened. But getting to the core, I either was going to write the book and make it really hard to do, or I was going to not write the book. So I came up with the idea of delving into my own cancer, because sometimes I think I was making myself vulnerable and that was difficult, but I persisted with it. And, you know, when I was 15, my father was 44 and he died of melanoma. So the image that I carried around of melanoma was that if you got it, you died. And when you're 15, what do you know? I mean, I knew surface parts of my father. He was an undeveloped character. So part of the, like, I went through Yellowstone, I went through, and there were parts of Oregon, there were physical landmarks that I went through that reminded me of him because we had been a camping family growing up. So I thought, why can't I flesh out who he was and understand who he was? Because he was pretty volatile. You know, he'd served in the Korean War, and I always wondered why he was so explosive. He could be so much fun, and then the next minute he'd turn explosive. And making myself delve into his life and understand, and the cancer link was very strong, and I appreciated who he was and what he was going through, so I could make sense of who this mysterious man was.
You say that your trip was also like psychotherapy, kind of what you're touching upon, and it reinforced a tenet that you had learned by watching your father at his best, which was maintaining a sense of humor, even under duress. So there are certainly lots of great humor moments in here, but I'm wondering, did you surprise yourself along the way or prove yourself wrong with any misconceptions you went in taking this trip?
I know I like to say that this is a sobering trip, but there's lots of joy and humor in it. And I think that one of the best surprises was how welcoming people were across the country to my message. I mean, I intentionally did not carry a cook stove, right? I was mostly carrying layers. And then, of course, I had this huge bundle of brochures. I had named my trip Heels on Wheels because it's easy to remember, it's short. And so the hospital helped me put those together. So I would hand those out. So that would make me stop and eat at restaurants. And any little town that I stopped in, I would make myself do a couple of outreach sessions. There were lots of little hospitals too, and I would go in and drop things off there because once again, it was, you know, look at me and what I can do. And I'm not, you know, I don't have to be your personal beacon. I just wanted to spread the message that it was a hope message. And it was so but the rewarding part was people, A, just listening to me, which was remarkable. And B, you know, inviting me for dinner, inviting me overnight, you know, letting me use their computer to do a journal entry because I didn't have a laptop or anything with me. I was counting on libraries and community colleges to do these because that was part of it. The hospital had this map and I was this little blue dot, right? And they would move me. I would send in a journal entry from somewhere. So this might answer another one of your questions, but people say, what do you think about all the time when you're on that bicycle for, you know, it's your job, your job is riding your bike. And a lot of me, you know, being a writer, I would keep a journal every night in a paper notebook. But when I got to a place where I had the liberty to do something digitally and send it back to the hospital, so I was organizing my thoughts so that when I sat down, I could spew something out that made reasonable sense. You know, it wasn't totally polished, but it was sort of, you know, the first draft of my history, so to speak.
Right. And on the note of the human connections you made along the way, you know, they were remarkable, and it showed a vulnerability between you and the people you met, right? And this I found to be in great contrast back to when your cancer returned. You were living in Wisconsin and it returned to your internal organs. And you at the time reflected that no one was ever supposed to know how you really felt because that was exposing weakness, which you thought was wrong. So what a switch of that mindset.
That's right. Because once again, writing the book forced me to evaluate those things and speak those truths. So it would have been easier for me to say, well, oh no, I always thought that I should make myself vulnerable, but it was, you know, it's how you grow up. And I grew up in New England, and maybe there's something about, look, you just, you know, buck up and you move on and figure it out. Because, you know, back in the 70s, when my father had died, the world didn't have therapy sessions and help. The message to us was, well, figure it out and carry on. So that's what we did. So I had to learn how to make myself more vulnerable and expose myself, so to speak, in the right way. And that was hard. And I wanted people to understand that, because I think a lot of people think that, oh, those traits come naturally to people. And I think sometimes it's an inside job and it's really hard work. But if you aspire to something, you have to work on it. And that's part of the message that it wasn't just getting through the cancer. It was also revisiting the messages that I carried around in my brain and how I wanted to reprogram myself, so to speak.
One thing you also reflect on is that you're motivated by doing actions instead of just hoping, and that you figured performing physical feats was like a vaccine for cancer. And you hiked the Appalachian Trail, and during that time, obviously, it wasn't this kind of project. It was for you, and you didn't have to keep journal entries to submit to a hospital per se, but you had an uncomplicated sense of purpose on the trail and embraced the simplicity of hiking. So did your cycling trip make you feel the same way years after hiking the AT, or did you find it a different experience, but ultimately the same, and doing something physical was healing in some way?
Yeah, and you had mentioned the cycle therapy before, and I think it's that act of movement that is, it's sort of like a metronome. So walking, I always found therapeutic. It's, you know, what do you do? Well, you put one foot in front of the other and you make progress. And having a goal was helpful. I mean, walking from Georgia to Maine, I mean, that was, what, 2,100 something miles. So that was very liberating. But once again, I had gone through these hideous chemotherapy treatments and I was well. And I was also in my 20s, and I thought, well, I don't know how much time I have. I better do these things that maybe other people would put off till retirement. I've got to do things now. So that the cancer gave my life, gave me a sense of urgency, I guess, when I was doing the trail. And doing the bike ride was, it's the same kind of thing. You know, it's that movement of the bike, the pedals going around one rotation at a time, you're making this trip. You don't go across the country in one day. And my idea was, look, the life that I have right now is basically dessert, because I didn't think I'd last this long. So I just figured whatever it takes, I will do each day. And if I stop to, because I see something interesting and want to learn more about it, then that's what I do. It was about immersing myself in, and part of it is the natural world. I mean, that's important to me, and it still is part of my, you know, my ethos. So it all tied together.
You also say what liberated you was consciously deciding not to be a victim of the disease. I mean, going from seeing your father pass away, and I'm sure cancer treatments were very different when he was dealing with it compared to when you were dealing with it starting in your 20s, and even to how they've advanced to today.
Right. And I think that word just sets people up to feel just lesser than. And I know that there was a concerted effort probably in the 80s, the 90s, to get away from that word and move it. I mean, words matter, words are powerful. And to use the word survivor. And like I said, you know, cancer is, I mean, you can be fortunate in that you get the right treatment at the right time because you're living in the right place. There is no 100% guarantee on anything, but you do have to persist and you have to advocate for yourself. So I just figured whatever days I get, because when you get this in your 20s and you watch your father die, you think this must be a death sentence. I better maximize every day, which can be exhausting, by the way. So, but you learn to just appreciate things and take them in stride. I mean, you don't want to have this in your body. You want to get rid of it, whether it's through chemotherapy or surgery or whatever method they're using. But it was about putting one foot in front of the other and moving forward. That was crucial, because it's also a head game.
If you're comfortable sharing it, how is your health now? How are you doing?
Oh, my health is really good. I mean, obviously I'm older. I think about that bike ride and some of those daunting climbs that I did. I think the highest one was, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000. It was high. But I still ride my bike. I'm still active. I swim. I stay in shape, because it's exercise to me is cheaper than visiting a therapist, right? And it keeps me whole. And I try to do it year round, because it's part of me. And if I don't do it, then people can tell, like, Elizabeth, you're a little bit grumpy. I know, I need to move. So.
And have you been cancer free as well?
Yes. I mean, here's the thing about melanoma. Right. It's insidious, because it first showed up as a skin lesion. Right. And that's the thing. You can see it. So you think, all right, I see it. Let's take care of that. The scary part is when it goes inside. And, it was in my liver. It was in my lungs. It was in various places, which you'll learn about if you read the book. And that's what is terrifying, when you first learn that and you think, uh-oh, now we have a different enemy. So that it's sort of like about democracy, it's eternal vigilance. So you have to go see the dermatologist, you have to use your sunscreen. And, on the bike ride, I was carrying, sunscreen coupons to hand out to people. So that was another good entree to a conversation. The 5-year mark of being cancer-free that I used to organize and carry out the bike ride, there are no guarantees, but it's a good marker. And thus I thought, this is a good time to do this. Now, did I think I would last another whatever, how many years it's been? No, I didn't. I had no idea, but here I am. So, I had to get this book out, right?
Well, and you note that every time you thought you wanted routine patterns, a sense of quote normalcy, you end up embarking on an adventure. So do you have a next one in mind?
Well, I tell you, people keep asking me that, and one is getting the word out about this book, because I feel like it's really important to get this in the hands of people who, whether they ride their bikes, whether they've survived cancer, everybody has a cancer story, right? And I want people to see what's possible. So that's why I wrote the book. The other part that I do is I do a lot of volunteer work in addition to my regular job, because the earth matters. And so I do a lot of invasive removal, which I was doing when I lived in Wisconsin. And that's sort of how I give back. I do trail maintenance on the equivalent of the Appalachian Trail. And so those kinds of things, I don't know that I need to do some dramatic overarching trip again, but this kind of ties the bow to what I was trying to do, is the natural world is a balm. And I feel like it still is. And it doesn't mean I have to be hiking. I mean, I still hike, I still do trips, but it's that giving back part now that I find very rewarding.
Well, Elizabeth McAllen, I want to thank you so much for not only sharing your book, but sharing your insights with us. It's greatly appreciated.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your interest. I very, very much appreciate it.
Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Elizabeth McAllen is a cancer survivor and the author of Outpedaling the Big C, My Healing Cycle Across America. She joined me for this month's Fit for You segment, and you can explore others at wuwm.com.